light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming? Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, God bless America, land that I love. America, America, God shed His grace on. I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There's a star-spangled banner waving song. So many miles away.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog by the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Do you want to lose your mind? Walk right in, sit right down. Baby, let your hair hang down.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Oop. And welcome to the Shooting Bench. I forgot to push my button in time there. It's the 6th. Nope, it's not. It's the 5th of June. And it's a Wednesday. Glad to see you guys all in here. Let me turn this way down. There, that ought to be better. I'm blowing your ears out there. How's that? Is that a little better? Okay. All right, let me go check the chat room and see what's going on. Tomorrow is the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And we've got a few things to talk about that as soon as I check and see who all's here. All right, Nan, thank you. Tebow. Tebow, yeah, we're going to talk about that. I saw that. 7x7, Mountain Shooter. You're very optimistic tonight. Good to see you in here again. Nan, you're not supposed to be in 108 degrees and get bit by skeeters at the same time. That's just not normal. So, anyway. All right, let's move on. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And primarily, right now, is the D-Day celebration. Remember the other day when we went to our VFW deal over here for... Memorial Day. And we met that old guy there, 96 years old. And he was at Normandy, getting around real well. And we just lost another code talker, I believe, yesterday or the day before yesterday. And if I could get this, thing to close out, I hate this thing. William Tully Brown, 96 years old, a third one of the code talkers has died this last month. So we're losing them quick. I believe I read here that there's only 5 code talkers left. Let me see. Boy, I'm just about to get upset with this thing here. I think they said there was 5 left. And I don't know if the one and only one that I met is still alive or not. I'll have to get online and go through the names and see if he's one. Yeah, 5 known living code talkers left, Navajo code talkers, according to the president of the Navajo Code Talkers Association. Neat story. I loved to talk about the code talkers. I like to read about them. A lot of interesting stuff there. They were definitely... definitely heroes in their time. So, and there was another deal here. Here's another one. 97 years old. Now, all of your D-Day, I mean, all of your World War II vets that are still alive today are going to be pretty close to 97 years old. The one we met was 96. He talked about a friend of his that was 97. This code talker was 96. It just died a couple days ago. And here's another one, a D-Day veteran, 97 years old. Are you ready for this? This doesn't happen very often. There's been a time or two. 97 years old, parachuted into Normandy this last, was it today? Let's see. Anyway, I guess I would assume they probably did it today, or today in Normandy anyway. They said they did it 75th anniversary of it here. So he said, everything for the most part repeated except this is a daylight jump, and the Normandy jump in 1944 was a nighttime jump. He said, I didn't know where I was. I knew where I was here. We had the American flag flying below us. I couldn't see it, but I'm pretty sure it was very beautiful. The jumpers were honoring the airborne soldiers who descended into gunfire and death ahead of the June 6, 1944 seaborne invasion. He said, I represented the United States coming here. I really appreciate all the love and their kindness and heartfelt emotion. So here's another one. Let's see if this is current here. This one is 99 years old. Gets an ovation from the Queen and Trump as he leads a tribute here. Yes, this is current. 99-year-old D-Day veteran got a standing ovation from Donald Trump and the Queen Wednesday as he led the nation's tributes to brave troops who stormed the Normandy beaches 75 years ago. John Jenkins gave a moving speech at the historic D-Day commemoration ceremony. He's all dressed up in his, he's not either. He just got some medals on. I guess it's just a suit and tie and a beret. But if he's giving a speech at 99 years old, he's doing okay. That's pretty neat. So, let me move that one. Now, what Tebow was talking about there a while ago was, you remember the Parkland deputy or former deputy that took... Man, I swear I don't know where in the world all of these ads are coming from. Everything's just fine until I start talking about it. I've got to figure out a way to get around this. I'm sure they're trying to sell me some kind of ad blocker or something here. Anyway, he was fired a while back, and that was good. And he is now being charged after all this time. He's being charged, let me see what the, several charges now. And here we go. I'll just bring it up on here, and then I won't have to worry about all these dumb ads here. Come on. Here we go. He was arrested today in connection with his not doing anything during this mass shooting. It took him 15 months to get this all taken care of. I'm not sure why it took so long, but the according to Broward County Sheriff, Peterson and Sergeant Brian Miller were found to have neglected their duties during the February 4th, 2018 shooting in Parkland. We cannot fulfill our commitment to always protect the security and safety of our Broward County community without doing a thorough assessment of what went wrong that day. So on down here a little bit, both of them have been terminated. We knew that. And he was arrested on 7 counts. Now, I think this may be a very skillful thing that they did here. I think that... says they arrested him 7 counts of neglect of a child, 3 counts of culpable negligence, and 1 count of perjury. Now, I think they did this with those particular charges for a reason, because if you'll recall, Castle Rock versus Gonzalez back in 90-something. Where they determined, and we've talked about this many times, they determined that the cops have no obligation, no legal obligation to protect you. They're basically there to fill out a report and clean up after everything's done. So I think that they worded this in such a way, I may be completely off base, but I can tell you that if they would have worded it differently, that Castle Rock versus Gonzalez case would have come into play and he would just be turned loose. So I think they put neglect of a child and 3 counts of culpable negligence, 1 count of perjury. Perjury doesn't have anything to do with it. Because if they would have put anything worded in such a way where it sounded like it was his responsibility to protect those kids,
I think it would have been dropped right away quick. Maybe not even. And that may be what part of what took them so long to get this taken care of, to get this worded in such a way that they can hang him out to dry. So I may be completely off base, but that's what I think. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So he was taken into custody and booked into the Broward Sheriff's Office main jail. And I can't find one story or one remark or any of all the stuff that I've looked through here about this. I can't find anything where people are not calling him a coward. Maybe because he is a coward, maybe it doesn't bother him. Hell, it bothers me that everybody's calling him that so much. I mean, man, I don't know how you'd stand it to know that everyone in the United States that has the internet, TV, radio, knows that you're a coward. Everyone feels that way pretty much universally that I know of. I haven't heard anybody say, well, he was doing his job. He was just making sure everything was all right. There may be some saying that, but I haven't heard any of them. So that's they may be required to stop a crime in progress, that's right, if they can, if they're able. But they are not, have no obligation, no requirement whatsoever to protect you. Looks like my little, oh, there it is. That's what's going on. Yeah. My handy dandy little knife here was not put up right. So that's what's going on in Florida. We'll see. I'll follow this pretty close because I'm anxious to see how this turns out here. So let me get some of this stuff out of the way. There we go. That's what I needed out of the way most more than anything. This was in Utah. You know, this whole Antifa thing, and I don't understand how they continually get away with the things that they get away with. I don't understand how we just got word here day before, no, it was yesterday. There was an organization in Oregon that called themselves Oregon LFA 3%. Now, they have pirated the name. I never heard of them until day before yesterday. But obviously they pirated their name. They are not part of us, part of LFA 3%. The only ones, the only LFA branches that there are Arizona, Washington, and Missouri. And that's all there is. So anyway, I don't know what their intentions were, what their mission statement was, or what they did prior to the last few weeks here. But apparently they have run by the same people, but they've changed their website and they are 100% Antifa now. So that's a little disturbing. I don't know the whole story behind it. It may have all been a setup, you know, just a ruse to start with by claiming to be LFA 3% and then acting like they're becoming Antifa. They may have been Antifa to start with and started this group and Facebook page and everything and let it run for a little while and then changed just to bring disrepute down on LFA. I don't know either way. I have no way to research that I'm aware of. But this guy here is most likely part of, he looks the part of one of these Antifa groups. Anyway, he said he intentionally run over an 11-year-old girl last week because she was white. Guy's name, and I can see the guy being upset. His last name is Becky. So obviously he didn't join the Army. Hey, Becky. Yes, Sergeant. Stephen Becky is his name. Just like it sounds, B-E-C-K-Y, 19 years old. Arrested last Friday for attempted criminal homicide and driving under the influence. Anyway, I don't get this guy. He waived his Miranda rights and just spoke right out and said, yeah, he admitted to hitting the girl because of her race. And this guy looks Snow White in the picture. I don't know what he thinks he is, what he identifies as, but he looks white. Looks like a Becky. So anyway, they got surveillance video from a nearby, either from a dash cam somewhere or a nearby store or something that saw this happen. Driving on the wrong side of the road. And said then the vehicle took a sharp right turn toward an 11-year-old girl who was walking her scooter up a hill. And hit the girl and then turned over and wrecked. So he said a witness told police that he got out of the vehicle, walked toward the injured girl and said, we have to die sometime. That's it's a bit disturbing to me. So it said that officer said Becky charged at the victim in an aggressive manner and that the witnesses restrained him, who was trying to leave the scene of the crash. So, and it may just all be drugs and whatever, I don't know. But that was a little weird. Let me go see if we got anybody on the chat room. Yeah, there's still a few. AZ Bound says the coward from Broward is going to be Bubba Bate. Yep. Boy, don't you know he's going to have a rough time if they put him in jail, especially if they put him in jail in Broward County. Well, I guess he's obviously in jail in Broward County right now. I hope he's, for his own sake, ask for solitary confinement or something. Tebow, that's good. Trans testicle? I don't know. All right, onward we go. There was, this is a sad story. I hate stories like it. By the way, speaking of that, we have a local girl here. She's, I don't know, 30 years old, something like that. Yes, I did. And this girl is, to say that she's down on her luck is an understatement. She's having a really tough time. And a lot of times, more often than not, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for people that are down on their luck because there's so many that have other choices. They could do things that brought it on themselves, and just because they're down on their luck doesn't automatically win my sympathy. But from what I know about this girl, she has everything from an abusive relationship to the fact that now where she's living with a relative, and the relative is threatening to kick her out. They're only allowed to wash clothes on certain days and that's they're only allowed to bathe once a week. They're only allowed to wash clothes once. Actually, they're not allowed to wash clothes at all. They're supposed to take them to a laundromat, even though there's a washer and dryer in the house. She hasn't got her car runs, but she hasn't got insurance registration on it. Right now she is 100% dependent on the good-hearted people in our area that will, take her into town to work, go pick her up, babysit her kids, and all this stuff. And I absolutely hate this situation she's in. And throughout all of this, she's in good spirits, and this is not something that she's brought on herself. She's tried desperately to get out of this. You know, her kid's shoes are too little. Her pants are too big. I mean, she's just getting by the best she can right now. She's not, you know, trailer trash or anything. She's just down, way down on her luck. And her story, you know, there's a whole lot more to that story that I won't go into right now. But, you know, we're doing everything that we can to, you know, get her a ride to town and do the things that we need to do to make sure she gets to work and everything. And found, you know, babysitters at the appropriate times and all this stuff. So what that has to do with this next story is, there is a teacher here. And see, this is one thing, and I've said this a million times, whether it's a cop or a priest or a parent, or in this case, a teacher or a scout leader or whatever the case may be, my goodness, it tears me up for people to abuse kids, whether it's, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, whatever it may be. In this case here, see if I can get rid of this damn thing. In this case here, they gave this kid, the teacher gave this kid, autistic kid, gave him a prize, a trophy, kind of, for being the most annoying male of the year. Now, I'm not the world's leading foremost authority on autism. I don't know everything. I don't understand all I know about it. I've been around a few autistic kids. But this trophy, this lady went out of her way. Even got a picture of it here. This is the Daily or Bailey. Bailey Preparatory. I'm looking at the actual trophy, the picture of the trophy. Bailey Preparatory Academy, 2018-2019, Most Annoying Male. And I don't know to what degree someone with autism understands, you know, everything that is going on around them. I have very little knowledge of it, so I probably shouldn't, you know, act like I do, because I don't. But whether the kid does or not, you know, I understand what she's doing. And it said this kid's 11 years old and was given this trophy by the special education teacher in front of the students. And the parents said we were blindsided. We just weren't expecting that. As a principal or a teacher, you should never let this happen to any student. It says the Gary Community School Corporation does not condone this type of behavior. They're trying to distance himself from the teacher there and issuing apologies to everyone that's involved. So that's all well and good. I want to know what's going to happen to this teacher. The father said he tried to leave the award on the table, but was approached by his son's teacher, reminding him not to forget the trophy. He said the teacher acted as if she were trying to play off the incident like a funny joke. And Amy said, I hope she gets fired. I hope she gets fired. I hope she doesn't get another in her area fine or anywhere else. That this is in a permanent record somewhere that will keep her from working in that line of work, you know, from now on. That is a very, very heartless thing to do to a kid. It's bad enough to do that to any kid, but you know, maybe at 11 years old, it wouldn't be right to do that to any kid, but I can see how, you know, I'm sure that I deserve that trophy more than once. And knowing my teachers the way I did, if one of them did, I would have taken it as a joke, and I would have probably carried it home proudly and put it on a shelf. But in this instance, this is not the case. Said, we acknowledge the potential impact that an experience like this could have on the child's mental well-being, self-esteem, and overall level of comfortability in a learning environment going forward. See, father said it wasn't until he went home after the award ceremony and shared what happened with his wife later that night that the reality of what had happened really set in with him. Now, I'm not sure what... Well, let me just tell you here. It said, he said throughout the school year, his son's teachers routinely called home with concerns about how to handle the fifth grader's behavior, but it wasn't until his son was presented the most annoying male award that the father felt real concern. Now he's left wondering if these calls home were contributing factors in the trophy his son was presented. I'm sure they were. I'm sure that's part of it. He described some of his son's mannerisms as a student with autism. 11-year-old is nonverbal, occasionally rocks back and forth, and become easily emotional. That doesn't sound to me like someone that could be, if he's nonverbal, and this rocking back and forth, that you see that, that's quite common. I saw two of them in Walmart the other day, and I, God bless the lady that was with him. She was just so kind and talked to this kid like he was, of course, he didn't act like he hardly understood what she was saying. He would just kind of grunt and nod, but, and she really, really treated this kid. He wasn't a kid. It looked like he's actually probably older than she was. But, she treated him like he was, you know, 12 or whatever the appropriate age was, probably. And I really got to hand it to her. I don't know that I'm cut out that way. But she was doing a great job. I kind of listened in there a little bit, kind of followed him around, looking at Levi's and their Wranglers and stuff, and kind of listened to how things were going. And I was most impressed with her, the way she handled that. Anyway, that's enough of that story. And we're already... We've already used up over half our time here, so I think we'll take a little break. And you know what happens next.
I'll be back.
Campfire, coffee, from a tin cup in my hand. It sure warms the fingers. A friend I understand. It sure smooths the wrinkles in my soul. Sleeping in the moonlight, a blanket for a bed. It leaves a peaceful feeling in my mind. We'll be right back. cowboy at heart. 'Cause he made wide open spaces from the start. He made grass and trees and mountains and a horse to be a friend. To lead old cowboys home again. The trails to lead old cowboys home again.
But we have to stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism, smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we wanted to maintain, and that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom, keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
Irony and its close cousin absurdity meet nowhere closer than at the confluence of left-wing politics and gun control legislation. As usual, and especially in the case of guns, the leftists tug at the fragile heartstrings of emotion when the sturdy rope of reason escapes them. This has been seen nowhere more clearly than in the aftermath of Adam Lanza's Sandy Hook school shootings. Samuel Johnson once famously said, "Patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels." He was wrong. I've come to realize that children are the last refuge of scoundrels. Anytime the political left wants to grandstand on an issue, they justify it with the now hoary cliche, "It's for the children." Their gun-free school zones ensured that the Sandy Hook kids didn't stand a chance. Apparently, the anti-gunners' concern for children is further bolstered by continuous misuse of the firearms vocabulary. Their insistence on referring to magazines as clips, the constant reference to semi-automatic firearms as automatics, thereby implying that they are machine guns, and calling cartridges bullets, are just a small sampling of their shallow understanding and intentional misdirection. Too often, they are people who don't know what they're talking about, yet wield massive amounts of authority. Their abject technical ignorance would be more palatable were it not being used to strip Americans of their rights. People would laugh at a cardiologist who called the heart that blood pump thing in your elbow that goes thump thump. Yet the anti-gun types are still taken seriously after they say equally ridiculous things. Amongst other things, the 1994 assault weapons ban contained a prohibition on barrel shrouds. While attempting to get the ban reinstated after its 10-year sunset provision, perennial anti-gun New York legislator Carolyn McCarthy was asked what a barrel shroud was. She infamously replied, "I believe it's a shoulder thing that goes up." Barrel shrouds are nothing more than small heat shields designed to protect a shooter's hand from a hot barrel. They are a safety feature. Some, though not all, have a military appearance, but none of them affect the function of a firearm in the least. Leave it to the left to ban safety features. The ban featured other bizarre prohibitions, such as bayonet lugs on rifle barrels. These fixtures allow a bayonet to be mounted on a long gun. In modern militaries, bayonets are rarely seen off the parade ground. Still, the nervous Nellies who authored the ban insisted on including them. Why? Did the authors suspect that our criminal element was massing, like World War II Imperial Japanese troops, ready to stage bayonet bonsai attacks? Apply your own litmus test to everything you hear from the mainstream media and anti-gun politicians, and understand that it is impossible for their constant stream of disinformation to be accidental. There are, logically, only three possibilities. They are intentionally pushing an agenda, they are too stupid to hold their offices, or they are too dishonest to be trusted. In any case, their blather is not worthy of your ears. Reports are that December 2012 background checks and firearm sales have broken all previous records. The sad irony is that the public aren't buying these weapons because they fear the likes of Adam Lanza or even common street criminals. They are buying them in fear of their own government. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. That was kind of a long break, but had some stuff to take care of here. So let me get back over here and I'll tell you what else I wanted to see. I thought I saw N.M. Glock in there a while ago. Haven't seen him for a little while. Let's see. He must have left already because I don't see him back. So we got Mountain Shooter and Nan. Anonymous just popped in there. Doc's with us. That's good. All right, let's see where we're at here. Oh, I read this today. And, you know, back through the years, we've had different stories about what, I guess the only reason this really sticks out to me is because of the direction that America's going right now. And it also, you know, sometimes it takes years, many years, to hear for the truth to come out. And this is, why do we have noise coming out of my computer here? Okay. So in Tiananmen Square in China, originally there was, I think 20 or 30 and then 200 or 300 that were killed. Well, apparently now they've come out with a new... I wish this noise would stop. Okay, noise, stop. Now. There's no play button. There's no pause button. There we go. Maybe that'll do it. Okay. Now, as you were. 1989. They said that this secret document has come out now. They said there was at least 10,000 people killed by the Chinese army. You know, we've all seen the picture where the guy's standing out there by himself in front of the tanks on Tiananmen Square. There's a picture here of, let me keep my thought here. In the picture that most people see, you see like four tanks. And for someone to stand up against one tank is pretty impressive. I tell you what's not impressive is this music that keeps coming on here in different areas. So whatever website this is, I'm not going to use it anymore. How about that? You see four or five tanks, and I've seen the full picture today. And there's actually about 30 tanks. There's 19 of them in a row lined up headed towards this guy. And then there's a kind of in a parking lot or a little square area. It looked like there was probably, at least 20 more, 30 more, something like that. They're kind of jumbled up there, and I couldn't really count them individually, but there's quite a few. But in this report, it says that this newly declassified document said it was written less than 24 hours after this massacre. It gives a much higher death toll than the most commonly used estimates, which only go up to about 3,000. Only go up to about 3,000. And for a government to kill 3,000 of its citizens, that's pretty significant in my mind. But the way they did some of this, this was with extreme prejudice. It wasn't just as a unintended consequence of driving the tanks through the square or something. It says that they were wounded female students said they were bayoneted as they begged for their lives. Human remains were hosed down the drains, and a mother was shot as she tried to go to the aid of her injured 3-year-old daughter. This report was written on 5 June 1989 by the then British ambassador to China. It talks about secret cables and whatnot. But the ambassador said that his account of the massacre on the night of 3 and 4 June was based on information from a source who has spoken to a good friend in the Chinese cabinet. Now, on down here a little bit, in unflinching detail, Sir Allen told London that the atrocities against thousands of pro-democracy protesters in and around Beijing's Tiananmen Square had been coordinated by the 27th Army of, I guess, Shaanxi Province, whose troops he described as 60% illiterate and called primitives. He said previous waves of troops had gone in unarmed to disperse the protesters, many of whom were students. Then Sir Allen wrote the 27th, I don't know why they call this the 27th Army. I guess that's the way they would be like the 5th Army or the, 2nd Brigade or whatever. They call it the 27th Army. 27th Army APCs, Armored Personnel Carriers, opened fire on the crowd before running over them. APCs ran over troops and civilians at 40 miles an hour. Said students understood that they were given 1 hour to leave the square. But after 5 minutes, the APCs attacked. Students linked arms but were mowed down. APCs then ran over the bodies time and time again to make, quote, pie out of them. And the remains were collected by bulldozer. Remains incinerated, then hosed down the drains. That's pretty graphic description there of what went on in Tiananmen Square. I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was quite that bad. Sir Allen reported a speculation that the communist government chose the 27th Army for the operation because its troops were the most reliable and obedient. He reported that they had been told that they had used dum-dum bullets as snipers shot many civilians on balconies, street sweepers, etc. for target practice. 27th Army ordered to spare no one. Wounded girl students begged for their lives but were bayoneted. A 3-year-old girl was injured, but her mother was shot as she went to her aid, as were 6 others. Cable also alleges that the massacre continued even after the first wave of killings. 1,000 survivors were told they could escape, but then were mown down by specially prepared machine gun positions. Army ambulances who attempted to give aid were shot up, as were the Sino-Japanese hospital ambulance. With medical crew dead, wounded driver attempted to ram attackers but was blown to pieces by an anti-tank weapon. In another incident, the cable said the troops even shot one of their own officers. 27th Army officer shot dead by his own troops, apparently because he faltered. Troops explained they would be shot if they hadn't shot the officer. The final sentence of Sir Allen's cable reads, minimum estimate of civilian dead, 10,000. So there's a little bit more to the story about, a little more details of it, but that's a little disturbing there. Let's see. Tebow seems to keep having to refresh here. I'm not sure what's going on. Let me go and check my settings over here and see what's going on, see if it's my fault. everything looks pretty stable and everything on my end, so hopefully everybody else is doing okay. All right, let's see if I can check one more deal here before... oh, here's a good one. We can finish our final time with this. This is a few months old, but I found this while I was looking for some other jackbooted thug stories. In Baltimore, it said, I shouldn't say this like it's a big deal, because I don't doubt that they do this a lot and have for many years. But now, at least in one instance, they're able to prove it. It says Baltimore cops actually carried toy guns to plan on people that they shot. This happened during a trial, corruption trial. And he said that the officers kept replicas in case we accidentally hit somebody or got into a shootout so we could plant these guns. The one guy had already, this detective had already pled guilty to corruption charges. He said he and his partners were told to carry the replicas and BB guns in case we accidentally hit somebody or got into a shootout so we could plant them. Same thing I just said. This came from the team's sergeant. And this was in the Washington Post originally. It didn't say whether or not the tactic had ever been used, but let's see. Detective Marcus Taylor, another cop that got caught up in the scandal, was carrying a fake gun almost identical to his service weapon when he was arrested last year. And there was something, here we go. Talked about the BB gun testimony is particularly disturbing in light of, now we talked about one of these, I don't remember which one it was, 12-year-old kid's death in 2014, a 13-year-old in Baltimore who was shot twice by cops in 2016 after he sprinted away from him with a replica gun in his hand, and 86 people have been fatally shot by police in 2015-2016 who were spotted carrying toy guns. So that's another thing that's a little disturbing. And I have to throw in this disclaimer again here that I am not now, nor have I ever been, and don't intend to anytime in the near future to be anti-cop. I do support the institution as it is supposed to be. But I'll have to say, we're getting more and more of these jackbooted thug stories. And the corruption and violence and stuff, we go back to, look at what happened to Lavoie. Look what happened to a whole hell of a bunch of other people. Same kind of things happening here. So that's a bit of a problem for me. Let me read this statement regarding the NRA here real quick, and then we'll close. It tell you what, let me hit a couple of buttons here before I get started and make sure that everything runs smoothly for me. And then we'll do that. Okay. Where was it? There we go. This isn't too long. I'm going to read the whole thing to you. This is, it's become very apparent that I need to speak out about what is happening at the NRA. I am in my second term as a board member, and I am deeply concerned about the actions and statements being made. The recent statements by Charles Cotton and Carolyn Meadows that are appearing in the Wall Street Journal and now other news outlets are outright lies. I have never been told, advised, informed, or consulted about any of these details mentioned in the Wall Street Journal, and who knows how much more despicable spending of members' money. These statements have maliciously, recklessly, and purposefully put me and uninformed board members in legal jeopardy. Prior to the NRAAM in Indianapolis, I sent an email to Wayne LaPierre's managing editor expressing my sentiment that Wayne LaPierre resign immediately. I also drafted a memo entitled Resolution of Concerns. Both of these statements are known to the NRA board. it is imperative that the NRA cleans its own house. If we had done so in Indianapolis, much of this could have been rectified. I do not support Wayne LaPierre continuing as the executive vice president and CEO of the NRA. The vote in Indianapolis was an acclamation, not a roll call vote. There is a cabal of cronyism operating within the NRA, and that exists within the board of directors. It must cease, and I do not care if I draw their angst. My duty and responsibility is to the members of the NRA, and my oath since July 31st, 1982, has been to the Constitution of the United States, not to any political party, person, or cabal. NRA board of 76 is too large and needs to be reduced to 30 or less. I always wondered about that. As a life member, they send me these ballots. I said, damn, that's a lot of people on here. He goes on to say, we need term limits of 4 terms on the board. We need to focus the NRA, the nation's oldest civil rights organization, on its original charter, mission, training, and education in marksmanship, shooting sports, and defense of the Second Amendment. I will dedicate all my efforts. You're going to be surprised when you hear who this is. I will dedicate all my efforts to the reformation of the National Rifle Association and its members, of whom I am proud to serve. It sickens me to publicly make this statement, but I will not allow anyone to damage my honor, integrity, character, and reputation. Needless to say, there are those who have willingly done so to their own. Steadfast and loyal, Lieutenant Colonel Allen B. West, U.S. Army retired. So, there you go. Interesting stuff going on in the NRA. I think we may see hopefully we'll see a house cleaning going on. I have I won't say distanced myself. I don't support the NRA. I stay a member because I need their credentials. But I've recently had over the last 4 or 5 months, I have had a horrendous time trying to get some stuff taken care of for some from instructor credentials and stuff. And if I had any other options available to me, I'll tell you, I would abandon them like a hot potato. But at this point, we don't really have any options, and I have struggled and fought with them, you know, week after week here to try to get some stuff done. But anyhow, we'll see what happens the rest of this year. I feel this sounds like there may be something going on there. So, with all that being said, it is 2200 o'clock, so I think I'll just scoot on out of here, and we'll see you guys. Not sure what's going on Friday yet. I won't make a promise, but hopefully I'll see you Friday night. Good night.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.